As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com on this Monday, January 30th. And I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu. And Arpin, you're not injured, are you?
Not that I know of.
Good.
We'll see what tomorrow brings. You know, it's. I feel like I could use Martin Saint-Louis' stock answers. Je sais pas.
Yeah. Well,
you never know.
Hey, we're all day to day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it's just that being in Brossard these days, it feels as though just by the simple fact of being there, there's a chance that you could get hurt. Because, my goodness, this team is, I don't know, there's so many guys that are injured today. Today, Martin Saint-Louis said that, you know, he said I had 15 guys practice. It felt as though I was coaching a minor league team.
A youth hockey team. Youth hockey team. And so he said, I know how to do that. Big smile on his face. Good he has a sense of humor about it. But yeah, coaching practice with 15 players. 14 players unavailable for practice today in Brossard on this Monday, January 30th.
And that counts Carey Price and Paul Byron.
And Paul Byron, number. Yes. Paul Byron and Carey Price, but their official injured reserve list counts 10 players. Plus, which includes Price and Byron, plus Edmondson, who is quote-unquote day-to-day with what was once a lower body injury, the day after became an upper body injury. Christian Dvorak, Kirby Dach getting treatment, Evgeny Dodonov getting a maintenance day as well. So add those four guys to the 10 guys on IR or LTIR. You get 14 guys unavailable for practice, 15 guys available. And, you know, I mentioned the joke. I told Martin Saint-Louis today because he was asked a few questions about injuries. You know, I think Yoel Armia, Jonathan Drouin, there's a few guys who were supposed to come back after the All-Star break. And he was asked, you expect them back after the All-Star break? It's like, just sip up. And I think if you had one of those, like, those things that kind of like check all the words that are said and have some that are, the ones that are said the most are bigger and the ones that are said smaller. Yeah, so if you did that for Martin Saint-Louis media availability this season, there's a few things that there'd be big words like the game would be big. A lot of other little of his go-to catchphrases, but the biggest thing would be je sais pas.
Yeah.
with all the injury questions he's answered, the answer has been the same every time. And I don't blame him for it. I'm not knocking him because he doesn't know. He doesn't want to know. This is plausible deniability. He basically refuses to answer any questions about injuries. Je sais pas is probably would be the biggest words on that heat map of Martin Saint-Louis words this year. It's remarkable. I mean, it's not like it's completely unprecedented, but the Canadiens are well on track to leading the league in man games lost for a second year in a row. And one case in particular that is very concerning, I think, not only for the player, not only for the team's ability to improve through this player, but also just for the general state of affairs of the Canadiens' injury management, is Sean Monahan.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound good. Listen, today we noticed Sean Monahan wasn't on the ice again. There's been no update on his situation. We asked for an update. We were told by the Canadiens communication staff that they were quote unquote working on it. No update came. So
there's going to be one before the end of the week. So that before gives the them a, the quite week. A, quite a big of leeway. So, you right. know,
since today is the start of the week,
yeah,
it gives them the whole week. So it's clear, it's obvious that, listen, they understand this is not only the medical staff at work. I feel like this is hockey ops as well. They know very well what a Sean Monahan injury means to their ability to navigate the trade deadline. It's not good news. It's not good news. With every day that there's no information, with every day that he misses practice, his trade value goes down. That's just the reality of it. And it's unfortunate for sure. Yeah. From the Canadian standpoint and from Sean Monahan's standpoint, who was having a great renaissance season. Do you feel that that's a fair assessment, that what I just said, that with every day that he misses, with every day that we don't have an update, that his trade value is going down?
Well, absolutely, because it's all about his health. I mean, all across the league, people have been concerned about the state of his hips, his two surgically repaired hips, and also the fact that wherever he is hurt now, whether it's the hip or the fractured foot that has not healed properly or something else, this is hampering his value, because a healthy Sean Monahan would definitely have been a commodity. But you have to look at how things are progressing. And if you're a team on the lookout to acquire a center, he's far from a sure thing at this point. So that being the case, I think that the price that teams will be willing to pay for him certainly going to be less than what it would have been on November 20th. For example, but look, I've prepared a little timeline just to put things into perspective of why is it such a big deal and how did we end up there. So Sean Monahan, okay, he played with a fractured foot even before the Canadiens headed to Western Canada. He was nursing that injury, getting treatment and whatnot. Then he arrived in Calgary to face his former team, the Flames. He arrived in Calgary with a walking boot. He faced the Flames, played against Edmonton, then left halfway into the Vancouver game. And by December 6th, he was out. Then for a week, he was labeled as day-to-day. Then on December 13th, it was announced that he would be sidelined for 2 to 3 weeks, which would have brought him, according to the timeline, to being backed in the lineup at the latest, but let's give them the 3 weeks, January the 3rd against Nashville. So basically he was supposed to miss 11 games. Since that day, he has missed 13 more games. And then Monahan started skating by himself like between Christmas and New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. He joined his teammates to practice on January 7th. He disappeared for a bit. And then he was put on LTIR, supposedly for technical purposes. He came back with a non-contact jersey on the 21st. He had maybe three or four skates with the team, disappeared again. And now we can legitimately be concerned with the direction that the rest of his season is going to take.
Yeah, well, I mean, just to be clear, he missed morning skate on the 26th, practice on the 27th. Or no, practice on the 20th. I don't think he didn't practice on the 25th, the day after the Boston game. But anyhow, most of last week he didn't skate. He was off the skate. So he was basically, he came back, he skated a few times, not many, and then was gone again. And there's been no update since. And it's just, listen, I understand the lack of transparency here. The Canadians can say that they want to be more transparent on things. It's just not practical in a lot of cases. They're hardly the only team in the NHL that puts up a brick wall when it comes to injuries, particularly an injury to a player that they're hoping to trade by the deadline. But my concern here when it comes to John Monahan, and I hate speculating, but in a vacuum of information, you're left with speculation is really what it opens the door to. And in Monahan's case, considering he'd been playing for a while on the fractured foot, and again, not the first NHL player in history to play on a fractured foot. It's quite common. It happens a lot. Players block shots. You get a tiny fracture on the foot. Turns into something serious. And again, this is exactly what happened to Shea Weber. They underestimated the gravity of his fracture, which was really kind of a microfracture on the top of his foot, which eventually grew and started fraying tendons and just creating more damage. And ultimately, a few years later, ended his career. Who knows what happened in Sean Monahan's case, but the fact that he was playing on a broken foot, naturally your body will tend to compensate, causes problems elsewhere. And my only concern, and I hope really for his sake, forget the trade deadline, forget everything else. I hope for his sake this isn't the case, but I worry about his opposite hip. You know, if it's his right foot, which it is, how much is his left hip, like his reconstructed left hip, compensating for it? I hope it's not that. Really hope it's not that. But it's worth wondering. You know, there's a lot of questions, and let's hope it's nothing that serious. But it's a real blow to both him and the resumption of his NHL career and his status as a real solid, well, he was a star player flat out in Calgary. I don't think anyone expected him to get back to that level, but to get maybe one tier below that was where he was trending before, you know, into the end of November or so. So, you know, what this means for his career and what this means for the Canadiens' trade deadline plans, it's pretty catastrophic. It really is not good.
No, and you mentioned the trade deadline because Joel Edmondson is not on the ice either. He had a lower body / upper body injury, so we could suspect that his back problems are back. The back is back, but those were the two main trade chips that the Canadians had, and we touched on this in the French episode on last Friday. But I want to ask you the question more in a different way. Do you think that since the two biggest trade chips that the Canadians had are both on the shelf right now, it's going to be a priority for Kent Hughes to say, we need to manufacture futures, manufacture assets in the form of either draft picks or prospects, and unload someone, anyone, that could get us that sort of return that we were counting on? Or basically, they're just going to look at their roster and say, well, there's nothing to be added there, so there's no point in us trying to move a Jake Allen, trying to move a Christian Dvorak, or anybody of that sort, because that's ultimately those were the two guys that we were hoping to get something significant in return for, and that's just not happening. So are they just going to count their losses or try to be aggressive in trying to get the return that they want, no matter who they give up, but, you know, trying to maybe broaden the scope of who they put on the block?
I mean, yes and no. I don't think there's much limits as to who's on the block. You know, I mean, if a team is interested in, say, David Savard, let's say, mm-hmm. it's not as if Ken Hughes is going to hang up the phone, you know, regardless of whether Edmondson was available, regardless of whether Monahan was available. It's I don't think, other than their who they view as their core young players, I mean, I think pretty much anyone's available. If you take out Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, Kirby Dach, Caden Gooley, that's about it. And Sam Montembeau, apparently, based on the adamant no that Kent Hughes said when asked if he would consider trading him. Other than them, and Juraj Slafkovský, obviously, I just don't see how anyone would get a no answer. And the guy that continues to intrigue me, when in the scope of your question, whether if he does feel desperate to manufacture futures, is Jake Evans. That's the guy, even though he's hurt right now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he'll come back. He has enough of a track record now that teams know what he's about. You'd be getting a good right shot faceoff guy. You'd be getting what's become a very effective penalty killer, and a guy with some degree of offensive upside who actually, when healthy, performed well in a playoff scenario. You know, so to the point where he got elevated to the top line when Tomáš Tatar was taken out of the lineup, it did pretty well until he got, you know, completely smoked by Mark Scheifele in that playoff run. So, you know, two more years at $1.7 million a year. Like, I think he's the one guy where your question applies, where he's probably someone that Ken Hughes would rather keep. He provides an important layer of insulation for both Nick Suzuki and Kirby Dach if they're at center, as a right shot defenseman who takes defensive zone faceoffs, can take the first faceoff on a penalty kill, assuming it's on the right side. You know, Nick Suzuki's doing that right now because Jake Evans is not there. And so, right. So it's not like he's not an important player, even though the offensive numbers are not necessarily there for him. The team sees a lot of value in what he brings, especially at that number. But I think that's why other teams would look at him and be like, wow, we could use a guy like him at that $1.7 million cap number. So if they did feel the need to maybe expand the scope to a player that they'd rather keep just in order to get some futures, particularly for this upcoming draft, maybe him.
Yeah.
That would be the guy I would look at, especially
more than Dvorak.
I mean, I just don't think they'd get a whole lot for Dvorak. The contract itself, with 2 years left at almost 4.5, you know, he's a useful player in a similar way to Jake Evans. Like, I mean, you're basically getting Jake Evans at a third the cost almost. I mean, it's not quite a third, but still it's pretty close. So his value is much higher because of that, the disparity in that number. And I don't think the Canadiens would retain on Christian Dvorak. You'd be retaining for two more years after this one.
Right.
So it's, in terms of a value play, like Christian Dvorak's value on the trade market is almost, it's not zero, but if you're asking a team to take on the full boat of his contract, you're not getting much in return. Whereas in Jake Evans's case, at $1.7 million, it's similar to Brandon Hagel, right? I mean, it's, I don't know if you get the same kind of return because Jake Evans is not putting up the number, the goal numbers that Hagel was, but the value is augmented in a similar way, is what I'm saying. So don't think that the Canadiens are going to get two first-round picks for Jake Evans, please. Don't think that.
No, but you can compare it to, you can compare him, let's say, to Barclay Goodrow, in the sense that he's a player that fits a specific role.
Yeah,
and he's cost control. Yeah,
yeah,
I get what you mean.
Yeah. So in that sense, if the Canadians are feeling a certain level of desperation to manufacture, generate some kind of push forward out of this trade deadline, which they were banking on making a considerable push forward in their prospect pool / draft capital / everything. And if everything went well right now, I mean, they'd be an open shop. Evgeny Dadonov would have 15 goals and Jonathan Drouin would have had a resurgence and you know, Mike Hoffman would be scoring power play goals like crazy and some sort of interest would be generated by him. And Sean Monahan, you know, and Joel Edmondson, like all these guys would be all hot commodities on the market. It's just not the case. The other thing is that the problem is, like, the marketplace is pretty, there are players out there available. Very interesting players. You know, I mean, if Sean Monahan's not available on the market, well, you know, that only helps the, you know, the St. Louis Blues if they choose to trade Ryan O'Reilly, or you know, obviously the Bo Horvat market can't get much bigger than it would be already. But you know, that second tier of centers that fall under Bo Horvat, there's a bunch of them. Sean Monahan was at the lower end of that tier, if he was even in that tier, or the upper end of the next tier. So Joel Edmondson's kind of the same deal. You know, the Jacob Chychrun situation is real, and there's a lot of teams in on him, or a few teams in on him. But he's, you know, and he's in a tier with a few other defensemen that could be available. But the big question is his back. So him going out again kind of depresses his value. So it's already a bit of a crowded marketplace in terms of players available, which was already depressing the value, I think, of some of the Canadiens' options. And now these injuries just make it worse.
What's funny is that you mentioned O'Reilly and Horvat. The same agent represents Monahan, O'Reilly, and Horvat. So this is going to be a busy guy come trade deadline. But yeah, you're right. It looks as though it's going to be a buyer's market. In that sense, and mm-hmm. I mean, when it comes to Edmondson, again, they might have to hold on to him, but both for Edmondson and Monahan, who were question marks health wise, even before the season, it's tricky because on the one hand, a team wants to keep them, play them as much as possible to prove to the rest of the league that they're healthy. But at the same time, they're conscious to a certain extent that there's a risk. Not necessarily that they're, let's not call them ticking bombs, but there is clearly a health risk associated to them that the longer you hold on to them, if the health concerns are real, that it might just blow up in your face.
Well, this and, is,
yeah.
Sorry, but this is the big problem with Monahan's injury to me. Is that it started with something that the Canadians could justifiably say, well, this is just something that happened, has nothing to do with his injury history. It happens to players all the time. There's no way that he could have prevented it. And it speaks in no way to his susceptibility to injury. You know, I mean, but now it's evolved from that into something else that does speak to his susceptibility to injury. I mean, not having all the information. Again, big disclaimer. We don't know what's wrong with Sean Monahan, other than the fact that he played on a broken foot for a while, and he's been out ever since. And he's been out much longer than was initially anticipated he would need for the broken foot. So the natural progression of assumptions, which I think is relatively safe, is that in playing on the broken foot, it led to other things becoming problematic. And that's when you get into more of a susceptibility to injury kind of situation with him. And that's where I find it's
yeah, but it's, no matter how you present it from a PR perspective, it doesn't change his health condition. And I think that as much as we don't know, there are things that we don't know, but the other teams that are inquiring about him, they're going to ask Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton to play ball and say, be honest with us. You know, how's your guy?
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying is that they could have, during those conversations, initially, they could have just said, well, he took a shot off the foot. There's a fracture. We're healing it. He'll be back. He'll be fine. Mm. Nothing to do with his past history. Whereas now they can't really say that, can they? Like, they cannot use that same argument because it's obvious to anyone who's paying attention that it's not just the foot at this point. It can't be.
No.
And if it is just the foot, then the foot is far worse than they had originally anticipated, and we will have a major case of deja vu here. So either way, it's not good. Like, either way, it does not help their ability to sell any team on the reliability of acquiring Sean Monahan and planning on him to being in your lineup from March 3rd onward or even before that.
Yeah. So this goes back to basically the medical staff who's been under a lot of scrutiny lately, and the questions of do they let guys play while injured? Do they leave them on the ice for too long, or do they rush them in their return to play? So all that is part of the equation. So when it comes to Monahan, you know, apart from the simple broken foot that needed time to heal, that's where these other components might come in the way and might have factored in to explain why, instead of missing 10 or 11 games, it's turning on 25 and counting. So
he will have missed more than 2 months. By the time the break is over, we'll be on the third month of Sean Monahan being gone. And it was not painted in this fashion when it originally happened.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Now, the side effect or the byproduct of Sean Monahan being gone has been that ever since he left the lineup, more or less, Nick Suzuki's production has gone down significantly. Now, some of that, it's a convenient thing to look at Sean Monahan's absence and say, oh, well, naturally, Nick Suzuki had to take on more of a load, and consequently, his production went down. I think that's part of the equation. The other part is that the Canadian schedule, as it does every year, got very difficult in December. A lot of travel, a lot of playing on the road against more difficult matchups for him. And then obviously more recently, Cole Caulfield's injury, or Cole Caulfield being shut down to get his shoulder surgery. Jake Evans, as we mentioned earlier, his loss meant Nick Suzuki was doing a lot more time on the penalty kill, a lot more time in the defensive zone. So that's another portion of it. And then I think a portion of it is that, you know, I think Nick Suzuki's just gotta own it to some extent that he's not producing at a level that he was before. So of all those things. What is the biggest factor here, you think, in the way Nick Suzuki's been playing over the last, say, 6 weeks?
Well, my God, it's difficult. The biggest factor, I mean, the before and after Monahan is striking, just from a pure statistical point of view. You look at it, I mean, he started so strong, right? He had 28 points in his first 25 games.
Yeah.
And it established a standard that was unsustainable. So if you look at, oh my God, he slowed down since the beginning of the season. Well, no kidding, he slowed down. He was not sustainable. He would not have kept that pace the whole year. Now he went completely to the other extreme. And that's partly because, I mean, we're all excited about Kirby Doc's recent development, recent progress. And I think that it's great. But for a good portion, there was hardly any help from any other line. So it was Doc playing on the wing with Caulfield and Suzuki, and there was no way to protect them, no way to shelter them. So I think that's something that cause an effect. Now he has that with Doc thriving on the second line, but he lost Caulfield. And yeah, with so many injuries, so it's really a bad timing on that front, because had Caulfield been there and Doc being able to drive on his own line, you could have thought, okay, well, they're going to figure it out. Caulfield and Suzuki together, they're going to bounce back, because now the pressure is not only on their line, because you've got Doc is making another line produce the way Monahan was earlier in the year. So he's lost Caulfield. You've got so many guys, on the table right now that it's going to be hard for him to propel himself out of there all by himself because of all the responsibilities that he's got. He's got so much ice time. He's got he's got responsibilities on the PK, on the power play, and he's the captain of this team. That's something that we must not forget. Not to mention, he's been missing a bunch of practices and morning skates for treatment. So he's banged up too. So there's that. But I think that the fact that he's first year captain, let's not underestimate the pressure, the responsibility that comes with it, not necessarily in the public eye and what it means to the fans and act like a captain and whatnot, but it's a lot of pressure that you put upon yourself vis-a-vis your own teammates. And how do you want to be there for your teammates when they're struggling, when you are struggling? And how do you navigate in a season like this where you're trying to keep the head above water, but the expectations were where they were at. And if you try to convince the group that you could surpass those expectations, but halfway into it, well, it goes sideways. I mean, God knows what he thinks inside and how much this weighs on his own play and on his own daily life. But I mean, we've mentioned over and over again on this podcast over time how Max Pacioretty used to think that it was a burden on him when he was not producing offensively, and that wearing those two hats quickly proven to be too much for him. I think that Suzuki is going to be fine with it in time, but this is a guy who's not even at the point in his on-ice production and on-ice, the extent to which he had proven himself as a hockey player as much as Pacioretty, he's still, ironing out the highs and lows of his season, and he has not yet played a single season where from game one to game 82, he's got a certain amount of consistency. He's going to those rough patches, and it's not the first time that he's got a dip mid-season. So he might figure it out, and come to March or simply after the break, he's going to be fine. But I mean, I wish he would have been able to skip the All-Star break and sort of reset in his mind and say, okay, I'm not going to be the one again representing the Montreal Canadiens, doing the thing that I need to do, and just take some time off and press the reset button a little bit. Well, because that's what he needs.
Yeah, but I do think there's something to be said about reminding him of how good he is. The All-Star break, being at the All-Star game, could reinforce that. You know, I mean, it's there is, being among the best players in the league, just seeing yourself in that strata of NHL player. Yeah. Could help him psychologically. I mean, because today after practice, he answered a barrage of questions on, they weren't directly attacking his performance, but they were all had that as a subtext. And you could, like, Nick Suzuki is no dummy, right? I mean, he could see it. Like, it's, right. Do you feel it's difficult to be on the penalty kill and 5-on-5 and power play? Is it too much? Is it too much of a burden for you? Saw through that. It was like, I've done that pretty much my whole career. I wouldn't want it any other way. Every question I asked about, the weight of all the injured players that are not here, are the guys who are kind of left behind feeling that it's getting heavier, that it's more difficult. Acknowledge that might be a factor, but it's not just for him. It's for everyone who's trying to win these games. And so, any excuse that was offered up for him to jump on, he refused to take, while also refusing to publicly fall on his sword the way Max did all the time, and criticize his own play. He actually feels he's playing okay. Some people might get bothered by that because he's not producing numbers, but there's a certain level of self-confidence in his own game and his own circumstances that that he has. And I'm sure he's not 100% thrilled about his game. He definitely didn't sound that way in his answers, but there was just a self-knowledge, and probably fed by the coaching staff and what the things that he's been told, that he's a young player. He's still developing to a certain extent, and all the responsibilities that he has fall into the evaluation. But just to give a sense of what's gone on since Sean Monahan got injured. Okay, so you mentioned December 6th. So from December 6th to today, January 30th, among NHL forwards, Nick Suzuki is fifth in average ice time, 21.52 a game. Right after, shockingly, JT Compher. And in second place on that list is Arturi Lehkonen at 22.25. Obviously, the Avalanche were completely beset by injuries for a good while there. Mikko Rantanen is actually first at 23.24. So among the, let's say, top 10 ice time forwards over that span, Nick Suzuki has 10 points in 25 games.
Yeah.
No other forward. I mean, the next lowest is Lehkonen with 16 points in 23 games. Compher with 17 points in 25 games. Clayton Keller has 19 points in 27 games. No one's really close to Suzuki's 10 points minus 15 in 25 games. Over 21.52 of ice time. A 4.8% shooting percentage. 42 shots on goal is also the lowest in this top 10 by a wide margin. It's when looking at this in comparison, you know, 7 even strength points in 25 games. 2 goals in 25 games. Like, he is just on an island on this list of 10 players. The 10 players in terms of leading forwards in ice time since December 6th, minimum 15 games played, are Rantanen, Lehkonen, McDavid, Compher, really weird, Suzuki, Dreisaitl, Keller, Jack Hughes, Mitch Marner, and Tim Stützle. And so when looking at this group of 10 players, and you can actually even go further down, I mean, you have to go all the way down to 26th on this list, Boone Jenner, who has 8 points in 16 games only, and is averaging 20 minutes a game. So it's really a combination of lots of ice time and lack of production that is quite striking among what is a who's who, like an all-star list of players, all of whom, more or less all of whom, are producing at all-star levels, except for basically one. That's Nick Suzuki.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a, yeah, so his point per game average is way down, but you can ask, though, does it become, at what point does it become a vicious circle where the more he plays, the less he produces? You know?
Because, I mean, maybe, but that's yeah, it's never, it's sure, perhaps, but he's gonna have to learn to play. Maybe not quite this much, but it's not an outrageous number. You know, he's averaging 21.52 a game is a lot, but it's not a lot by that much. You know, maybe he should be playing like a minute less, 2 minutes less. Like, it's not like he's playing 24 minutes a game. Like, it's within range. You know, I mean, he's fifth on the list in terms of ice time per game. You know, if he went a minute down, he'd be 11th. If you went another minute down, he'd be 30th. So it goes by quickly, but yeah, it's you know, Bo Horvat, for instance, over the same span is averaging 20.36. I think that would be a sweet spot for Nick Suzuki. So is that extra minute and a half of ice time per game, which kind of equivalent, you know, kind of means 3 extra shifts, 1 extra shift per period. It makes a difference. I don't want to minimize it. That's a lot in the NHL. But you don't necessarily want to see someone's production get so deeply impacted by such a slight uptick in ice time. So this is something he's going to have to learn how to do.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore.
Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I mean, and I'm fairly confident that he's going to figure out before the end of the season. For now, though, Martin Saint-Louis is saying, listen, we think that from game one to game 82, we'll be able to recognize that there's been some progress, and he's just going through that right now. So at the end of the season, if they say, well, from the Nick Suzuki that we had in game one in his 200-foot game, you know, how he deals with the fact that he's spending a lot of time in his own end trying to retrieve pucks and organize, the counterattack, whether it's how effective he can be on the power play, whether it can be the balance that he finds between shot quality and shot volume, can be all sorts of ways to analyze it. But from game one to game 82, will we see a progress? And if at the end of the year, the answer is yes, well, no matter the dip that he will have experienced in the middle of the season, this will be considered a success for what this season was meant to be. It's just that right now, he's in the middle of the tunnel and he doesn't see the light. So it's tough. But I find that I overly want to find him excuses or something, but it's just that the odds are stacked against him in the sense of, you know, it's a perfect storm of him not performing, and he's left to his own determination and talent to try to figure it out, because he doesn't have any teammate around him to help him get out of there. Yeah. So it's going to be, it's all on him. So
it's a lot. And it's the second year in a row that it's like that for him. You know, he still has not missed a game to injury in his NHL or junior career. It's quite remarkable. Yeah. But that's when you're on a team that's as injured as often as everyone else is on this team. I think Jake Allen was saying it the other day when he was asked if he's going to be able to play without pain. He said, I don't think anybody on this team is playing without pain. And it's just and that's true of most teams, or probably all teams. It just seems especially true of this team. So, I do think that there's growth happening here, and that going through things like this will ultimately help him. But he's going to start teetering. Like, if he has a similar dip next year and it's similarly long, because no one is going to be concerned over a 5-game dip, you know, 5, 6, 8 games, you know.
That's, no, but when it's a month and a half,
when it's 25 games, we're talking about 25 games, like close to a third of the season.
Yeah,
that's a lot. And he went through something similar last year, so it's something that he needs to figure something out here. And I think going through it again, hopefully he can, for his sake and for the team's sake. But right now, it is something that he hopefully this break for him, even if it is spent at the All-Star game, could be beneficial in that way. So listen, we had a voicemail this week that came from a listener. Want to remind everyone that you can call and leave a voicemail, and you can ask us any question you want. And if it's appropriate, then we will play the voicemail on the show. Please leave your name and answer the question on the show. The number to call in order to leave that voicemail is 646-847-9404. I will repeat, 646-847-9404. This week's question comes from Paul. Let's listen to it now.
I have a question for you guys. It's a UFA question, and in this case, I'm wondering how it will apply specifically to Slafkovský. As we know, a player becomes an unrestricted free agent if their current contract ends after either 7 accrued seasons or they are 27 and older. An accrued season, if I'm not mistaken, is one in which the player was on the NHL roster for at least 40 games. Now, in light of the fact that Juraj only played 39 games this year before getting injured, should he not play another game this year in the NHL? Am I understanding this correctly, that this season will not count as an accrued season and the clock will only start ticking towards free agency as of next year? I believe that was also the situation with Kirby Doc, but I'm not 100% sure. Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work.
The pretty simple answer to this one. Yes, Juraj Slafkovský's at 39 games played, but he was on the roster prior to getting injured. He had a couple of games of suspension. He was injured without going on IR. So he did cross the 40-game threshold, which means that he is he has accrued one season of NHL service. So sorry. it's just not a thing with him. But it is true that happened with Kirby Doc, because coming out of his entry-level contract, he signed a 4-year deal with the Canadiens, and coming out of that contract, he will still be a year away from UFA status, which means that year you're referring to with the Chicago Blackhawks, where he got injured at the World Junior Championships, he did not accrue of a season of NHL service. So he's going to have to wait an extra year to be a UFA as a result of that. But for Juraj Slafkovský, he did cross that 40-game threshold before his season ended in New York at Madison Square Garden a little while ago.
He passed the 40-game mark shortly before getting injured. I mean,
yeah, it wasn't much earlier. I mean, it's important to make the distinction between a player who is injured and not playing versus a player who goes on injured reserve, and there are specific rules as to who can go on injured reserve. So Juraj Slafkovský missed 3 games to injury from October 22nd to the 27th, pretty early in the season, but did not go on IR at that time. He was suspended for 2 games for that hit in Detroit from behind on Matt Luff, who actually recently came back from the injury he sustained after that hit. Was still on the roster for those 2 games. So really it would have been, he would have hit the 40-game mark 4 games prior to when he played his 35th game of the season. So there's no benefit from that sense. And, well, there's no benefit, period, to Juraj Slafkovský missing the rest of the season.
There's no silver lining there.
There's no silver lining, as much as it might look that way when you look at the 39 games played. He was on the roster, on the active roster for the 40 game minimum. So he will be, could be UFA, could be a UFA as early as 25 years old.
So all that to say that Slafkovský's season is pretty much over. I don't think that they would try to, they will press the issue to make sure that he has 3 or 4 games of regular season before the end of the year. So he's, for all intents and purposes, I think that we can expect his season to be done. There are other guys, though, among the list of 14 guys missing that we should expect to see a bit sooner. Yoel Armia and Jonathan Drouin could maybe provide some help after the break. They were skating for the rest of the team on Monday morning. And an interesting tidbit is that the Laval Rocket coach, J.F. Hull, mentioned today to our colleague Stéphane Leroux of RDS that he did not expect to see the 4 forwards that were called up by the Canadiens again this season. So we're talking about Harvey Pinard, Ullonen, Pitlick, and Belzile. So it seems to suggest that the injury situation is going to be there to remain in Montreal. Maybe that it's just his mindset thinking that I better not plan to see them back. But for the time being, the head coach says, you know what, I'm forgetting about them. I expect them to stay in Montreal. So that doesn't really bode well for the injury status in Montreal. So we'll see how these things develop over time. But yeah, as we mentioned earlier, the break couldn't come at a better time, at least to provide some a bit of oxygen to all those guys.
All right. Well, let's leave it at that. We'll still be, despite the Canadians being off, we'll still be back with an episode that will be released on Friday of Le Sport Athlete Sick. And until then, you can always get a discount at theathletic.com/athletic support if you have yet to subscribe to The Athletic to read what we have to write. But we will talk to you on Friday with Le Sport Athlete Sick. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye-bye.